When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record not so daily, sharing a few thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist. Yeah, again, canned intros. I feel the obligation to do something different with them every time. Maybe I shouldn't, because maybe it's just a morning zoo crew obnoxiousness if I do that. Anyway, that's done. So what am I thinking about today? Well, this is one of the real benefits I get out of doing Thunder Punch Daily is that I am constantly on the lookout for topics and what am I thinking about every day and what kind of conclusions I'm coming to as I think about these different things and how can I compile this into something that it would be useful for another cartoonist. Although, quick side note, I wonder sometimes about making this more of a, like, even more of a journal microcast than it has been. Like, as you guys have probably noticed by now, I feel an obligation with every episode to bring something to the table that is sort of a loose conclusion that will, the hope is that it will instigate more discussion. And of course, I'm going to tie in my personal experiences into these things, but I feel a reluctance to just go into, well, this is what I did today, and here are some half-baked thoughts that I have about it. But, you know, I don't even know if I really feel this way or not. Something like that would probably be even more candid than I have been in the past, and I'm not so sure if that would be interesting or not. But something Renee Van Belsen said recently in the forums, or maybe it was in the comment threads on the site, I think it was right after Kevin's, one of his recent High Adventure Daily is the one called Fear, is Renee said something to the effect of, you know, the difference between podcasting and traditional terrestrial radio is that we don't have to worry about reaching such a wide audience. We can speak to niche. And what's more is that something that he suggested in his words is that the character of a podcast is traditionally a one-on-one interaction between the talent and the intended audience. So it has the latitude to be more personal, and therefore shouldn't we be more personal? I don't know. I mean, I'm already feeling like I'm showing a lot more cards than I have in the past. Maybe this is something I'll open up to in the future. You know what? I just did about 3 or 4 minutes of journal microcasting there. So if that was interesting, let me know and I can do more of that. But anyway, I want to get to the topic or the mini thought of the day, continuing on my Wonder Years-esque kind of approach to this microcast. Okay, so there's been this is sort of a non sequitur piece of the overall thought, but there's been a lot of talk about people coming back from Comic-Con and sharing blogs and reports. And the tone that I'm picking up on from a lot of people is, wow, Comic-Con's not so bad. Comic-Con is pretty good to independent creators. Some people are even suggesting that somehow the massive crowds there to see the Glee panel was in some way a benefit for the small press area. Until I see hard numbers of how well people did at the show, I mean, not to be too crass and too much of a capitalist, but still, you know, good experience. If you want to call it a vacation, call it a vacation. I'm just there to meet cool people and be around cool cartoonists. That's fine. I have nothing against that because I love cartoonists. But if you're going to say it was a financial success, I got to see numbers before I believe it. So anyway, that's neither here nor there. But that is just sort of like something I was picking up on in terms of the general tones. And it was really interesting to see how people are talking about it. You know, another thing it could be, and maybe this is cynical of me, is that this is people having a really good time socially and sort of reflecting on the entire experience as being a positive one. Sort of like, you know, it's like summer camp. You just got back from summer camp. You're thinking about, oh, I can't wait for next year. I don't know, but maybe I need to go to this thing one of these days and maybe stop being such a sourpuss about it. But speaking of being a sourpuss, this ties into the general thought of the day, is Scott McCloud posted on his blog, and I found this through Twitter. As much as it may surprise you, I talk a lot about the same kind of stuff McCloud does, but I am by no means a McCloud acolyte. I don't read his blog every day hoping for another nugget of wisdom to take back to the masses. But the July 28th, 2010 entry, The House That Patients Built. McCloud does a little wrap-up of his experience at Comic-Con International San Diego. And one of the things he talks about in there, three-quarters of the way through the post, is he talks about how it's easy. Well, I'll just read from the post. Here we go. It's also easy after a few years of frustration for even the best young cartoonists to believe that the system is rigged, and no matter how hard they work, there will be enormous obstacles put in their way that have nothing to do with the quality of their stories and art. And he makes the case about how, like, patience is a virtue in comics, and sometimes it just takes a long time for stuff to pay off, and quality will out, and a lot of the stuff we talked about in art and story. But that part about frustration definitely resonated with me, because this is something I've spoken to a lot, is that about how I do think that these conventions are a bit of a racket. And it got me thinking about... There was another blog post, and I don't remember who wrote this one, but they were people were calling it a poignant blog post, but I found it to be a little overly sentimental, where they were talking about how there's always these people in Artist's Alley who look up with this panicked look in their eyes, as if to say, something's wrong, I should be famous by now, you know, and I got to make a sale. And you know, I can speak for myself speaking only for myself, not speaking for anybody else in the Art and Strike crew, but speaking for myself again, I can definitely relate to that sense of fear. Not that I feel that sense of fear, but I fear becoming that guy. I fear becoming the guy who is so hung up on this mythical thing called success by the measurement of what most other people measure it by. That I'm going to turn into that guy one day, you know, and I know it's an irrational fear. It's like the fear of that you're going to turn to your parents, you know, that's an old joke. It's like, oh my God, I totally turned to my mother. There's always a fear of that thing that you don't want to become sneaking up, and you've just turned into it. And so you become extra vigilant and probably in my case, quite obnoxious about it. But, well, what does that fear speak to? It speaks to being a loser, somebody who has failed at the game, somebody who has made a few incorrect decisions in their youth, and now they find themselves in a place where they are experiencing less respect and less opportunities in life. And usually the failure also is a person who is feels that, like, life didn't deal them a full deck of cards. You know, they were missing a few opportunities sometimes, or they made them, like I said, they made a mistake. Where this coalesced into my thought of the day about the lovable loser character, man, it took me almost 8 minutes to get to the lovable loser character, the topic, the title of this episode, is I was rewatching the Transformers animated series recently from the beginning, because my wife, Anne, has heard me speak so lovingly of this cartoon series so often. She said, well, I want to, you know, if it's so great, let's watch it. But she's like, I want to watch it from the beginning. I don't want you to just pick out choice episodes and, you know, to try and sell me on this. I'll enjoy it the way you enjoyed it. Okay. So we pop in the first three episodes the other night. And the thing that struck me about this was that all of the characters in Transformers Animated, and side note, sort of asterisk sidebar in the college textbook here, is that this is that kind of analysis that I always encourage people to do whenever they're watching or reading something that they enjoy, is whenever that something grabs them, stop and ask yourself why, okay? So as I'm watching this, I'm watching it with one eye on the pure entertainment value of the show, but then the other eye is deconstructing everything to say, okay, how can I use what these guys did so I can do it as well as they do, okay? So sidebar over. So as I'm watching this, I notice that all of the heroes in the show are failures in some significant way. And I'm not going to spoil too much here for those of you who haven't seen the series yet and may want to check it out. But let's go down the roster and look at this and figure out how we can tie this into creating our own lovable losers. Optimus Prime, the leader of the good guys. Now, historically, Optimus Prime, when we think about him in the Transformers mythos, he is he's described in the Transformers universe profile book as an Abraham Lincoln figure. He's the wise general. Now I won't even go into the different schools of thought on that, judging by the inconsistencies of the writing in the early Transformers cartoon series. But for all intents and purposes, that's the picture we have in our heads of Optimus Prime as a character. He's the infallible, wise old leader. The guy who we don't want to get inside of his head too much, because you look to him as an icon. Well, on the other hand, in Transformers Animated, they went in a completely different direction, and they made Optimus Prime this low-ranking sort of sergeant. Well, not sergeant. It was more like a lieutenant. So they take the name Prime and use it as like a status, like a military rank, which I thought was actually introduced by Simon Furman for the nerds out there, and I thought it was a really ingenious use of explanation of the name. So Prime means lieutenant. And he's a low-ranking lieutenant who made a very serious error in judgment on a mission in his youth, just when he was fresh out of the Autobot Academy. And his best friend, Sentinel Prime, rises through the ranks to become the second in command of the Autobot Elite Guard. Optimus has failed. He's delegated to leading a repair team in deep space, fixing space bridges, an unglamorous job. He's a maintenance man. But he was destined. He wanted to be a great general in the army, a great academy graduate who goes on to military or professional glory. But he failed. He made this one blunder in his youth, and now he's a repairman. Bumblebee and Bulkhead, same kind of story. Bumblebee wanted to be an elite guard really bad, but because of in an episode called Auto Boot Camp, he makes a serious error in judgment. And although this error in judgment originally was going to propel him through the ranks of the academy, his friendship to Bulkhead forces him into a situation where he has to take the rap for something, and he gets kicked out of the academy, and he becomes a repair bot. Ratchet was tied into this sort of covert government organization to create a super weapon to defeat the Decepticons in the old wars. And through his own mistakes and his own failings, a friend of his gets hurt very, very badly, and he can't get over that. And so again, he gives up this. He looks at war as a glamorous thing, and he goes and becomes a repair bot as well. Prowl gets mixed up with the group later. He's not actually assigned to the repair detail. He finds them later on, and it's because he makes a mistake in his youth where he is destined to go through this sort of robot ninja academy. And because he cannot accept the death of his master, he does something that is outright borderline unholy. It's dealt with very lightly in the show, but he does something that is essentially so sinful, it's like one of the greatest sins of all. And it's in a very Eastern sort of way. It's not perversion or anything like that. It's sort of like this outright rejection of the way nature works. And so he gets sent off on this sort of vision quest by his master. You have to leave. You can't stay with us anymore. You have to go find yourself and find your true destiny. So again, mistake, he's sent off. And as a result, Prowl is kind of a jerk in the first season until he slowly begins to repair himself, repair his soul, so to speak. And that's what the series kind of becomes overall, is what I think makes that series so compelling is that all of the heroes are broken in some way. They are redemption characters, which I've talked about before, but they're also lovable losers, which I think gives it a very different characteristic than your traditional redemption character kind of tale, or at least what we think of when we think of redemption character kind of tale, because they are given no support from the outside world. To the outside world, they are losers. Whenever Optimus Prime has to call for help to Cybertron Command, Sentinel Prime answers the phone and is always dismissive of what Optimus wants. And then when the true scope of the conflict is revealed to the higher command and they understand it, they show up and sort of just take charge. Well, we're in charge now. You guys are just repair bots anyway. You guys are all losers. And then this kind of works into the dynamic about how the team works, because Optimus kind of like takes his frustration out on the rest of them, calling them, you know, a bunch of malfunctioning glitches. You guys are a bunch of losers, when really he's talking about himself. And it becomes this wonderful story about how these losers coming together and becoming sort of a family. They use that terminology a couple times in the series. It makes them the only people who can do the great thing that needs to be done at the end. The guys in power, the guys with prestige, they're at ease about their abilities. They have nothing to prove. And as a result, it makes them kind of lazy and also leads them to making some bad decisions. I'm talking about season 3, when Sentinel Prime takes command of the entire Autobot army and does some things that, I mean, clearly echo our previous beloved president in the United States. I won't go into any further than that. And it's not that important to the overall plot. But it's another symbol of how the guys with the prestige, the guys in charge, become myopic and not insightful about what needs to be done because they're not hungry to prove their worth to both to the world and to themselves. And I think that that's a component of the lovable loser, is a, sort of a drive to succeed that goes beyond the drive of the person who's had things go pretty well for them so far. The character who has life not handed to them, but who has been traditionally successful. Maybe they fear failure, but they've been reassured by constant success. Whereas the loser is living failure at the beginning of the story, and they hate it, and they want to get past it. But still, to go back to the redemption character story that I was talking about in a couple episodes ago, the difference is that it's something they got to get over. It's some pain, it's some kind of mistake, or it's some kind of bad deal that they've been handed that they got to get over in order to become a more well-rounded character. And the surprise, at least what I've been noticing with a lot of these characters, is the surprise is that when they become the non-failure, it's in a way that they didn't expect. I don't know what it is about that story that makes it so classic to us, but it's like, to go back to 80s movies, Teen Wolf, you know, Michael J. Fox's character thinks he wants the hot prom queen, and he goes through all these struggles in order to win her affections when he becomes a werewolf and whatnot. But what he really wanted was right in front of him the whole time, that kind of old story. The treasure was in your backyard, that kind of thing. It's akin to that at any rate, I've noticed. But there's got to be a reason that the lovable loser appeals to so many people. I was talking with a student of mine, a former student rather, Lauren, who is one of the most talented and amazing young people I've ever worked with. She's gonna blow the doors off of everything that we're doing right now, all the guys our age or my age at any rate. And we were talking about DreamWorks movies, and she was selling me on the fact of why she likes DreamWorks films, the animated films, better than Disney films. And she said to me that something along the line of, I'm paraphrasing now, she said that all of the heroes in DreamWorks films tend to be losers. They are losers in the sense that the whole world looks down on them, and they overcome not only their own personal failings, but they win the hearts of the entire world through their actions. And she said, now, Disney heroes, on the other hand, traditionally speaking, they're kind of losers, but they're not like real losers. They're not like outright, with the exception of a few cases, like maybe Lilo and Stitch and Aladdin. They're not really outwardly despised by the entire world. They're more like, this is more akin to the small person who you don't expect to be a hero, the Frodo Baggins and whatnot. Like, you know, the little hero who's capable of great things, and you don't know it until you see him do it. Whereas she was explaining to me the DreamWorks characters, particularly she was talking about How to Train Your Dragon, which I haven't seen yet, and I'm going to, so don't spoil it for me. I don't care about spoilers, but I do intend on seeing it because I've heard nothing but wonderful things about this film. And I loved Kung Fu Panda, surprisingly. I really don't like Jack Black in movies, but I thought that movie was exceptionally well done. And in that case as well, you're dealing with a loser who's outwardly despised. People think he's an idiot and a klutz and whatnot. And it's not by him becoming thin and trim and graceful that he becomes the savior, or the hero character. It's through finding out that some of what makes him such a klutz and an idiot also makes him, if used the proper way, makes him into a heroic character. But I'm getting a little long now, so I'm just going to move on. I just wanted to point out that this, as I thought about that McLeod article, and I thought about my fears of being a quote-unquote loser, and believe me, this is not something that keeps me awake at night. It's just one of those little nagging fears at the back of the head that we all experience, I think. It got me thinking about what makes lovable losers so compelling to us, and I think it's a little bit of that. I think it's something where we've all experienced it, at least experienced the fear of it. And watching a character who has failed then redeem themselves or overcome their failings is compelling storytelling. People love it. And I think it's something that we should consider as an option in all of our stories, at some point or another, when we're thinking of like what kind of characters we want to write, what kind of characters we want to introduce, how do we want to elicit compassion from our readers? That's something to look at. Okay, so who am I? I'm Jersey Droz, jdroz.com, Jersey on the Twitters. Thank you very much for subscribing to this content. We couldn't do it without you. You guys keep me from feeling like a loser. There we go. I tied it all together. I almost felt like I'm a professional at this thing or something. So don't forget to check out the other shows, High Adventure Daily, Mark of the Beast. Thank you to the new subscribers who have just joined. Glad to have you aboard. I hope you guys will check out the forums. There's a lot of really cool stuff going on in the forums. A lot of really great information being shared amongst people, and I'm positive that you will find it useful and helpful. If you check it out, it's right in the header of the Art and Story website, artandstorypodcast.com. One more thing, Rob Stenziger did a wonderful video tutorial on how to aggregate these microcasts into a podcatcher like iTunes, using a program called Soundbird. I posted a sticky at the top of the forums with a link to the video. And thank you to Rob for doing that. Thank you very much, Rob. I really appreciate it because I couldn't figure out Soundbird until you showed me how to do it, or Songbird rather. But yeah, it makes it's a little bit of a workaround, but it makes it fairly easy to get these shows put into an iTunes playlist, and thereby you can sync it to your portable device and listen to it wherever you go. So, okay, I will be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. Until then, remember, everybody.
In today's story, I had a bad dream. You know, bad dreams or nightmares happen to everyone, and they can seem pretty real, but they aren't. They're no more real than any make-believe story or fairy tale. So don't be ashamed or afraid of telling anybody about your dream. It happens to all of us. And like so many other things, talking it over with your mother or your father or maybe even a good friend can make you feel a whole lot better. Bye for now and pleasant dreams.